Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Richard Offey from the Rich Off Disability Foundation. So, can you tell me a little bit about the Rich Off Disability Foundation?
Okay, Rich Off Disability Foundation is an NGO founded in Ghana by Mr. Richard Offey, the president, which the fundamental of this organization. I was not born in disability. I started my career with Ghana, a football player, Mike Glacian, and Sule Montali Dems in the Liberty Professional Football Club in Ghana. When I was young, and I got accident at age of 18 and lost my leg. So after the accident, my family thought as far as I becoming a disabled, I'm becoming useless or something. So they maltreated me then, dragged me to the street. God being so good, I became captain for the Ghana Paralympic team in Ghana. Also had opportunity to meet ex-president Kufuor. The year that was 2002, and ex-president Kufuor also helped me to work with Ghana Cocoa Board and also lead the Ghana team to the world championships and so many things. And I realized in Ghana, especially West Africa, the disability situation is so horrible. You know, the family and the society, I think that we, the disabled people in here, are useless. So I dedicate myself as purposely to support and my fellow disability also that have rejected being in the street begging for arms. So we come out with this organization. The aim is to assist them through education, sport, great part in culture, job, employment. And we have done so many great things for Ghana disabilities. If you come to Ghana, as of the Rich Off Disability Foundation, the parliament or the gender ministry or even the first house of Ghana or any Ghanaians as well is a powerful organization that where disability development. So we've done a commander dominancy chief in central region of Ghana, the chief. We appealed to him, we appealed to the chief. The chief offer 40 acres of land. Construct a disability force educational complex so that we, the disabled people that are living on the street, begging for arms and time, so that we can keep this sports and educational complex we're able to build. We can have opportunity to acquire skills and knowledge in the school. So we have done the start cutting 2 years ago to start the project in Ghana. Our Facebook site and our Facebook page, we find all the pictures and the videos there. So he's in the last 3 years, spent our NDC, the old government was in power, they helped to do national fundraising, which is His Excellency, Vice President, late Vice President, came and donated a car even to the organization, and some company donated some bag of cement and the other stuff. So start the project. So, and the project, yes, and we're still calling upon the international institutions and the NGOs, people, you know, Africa, the disability situation is so horrible. People were suffering, stable people, lack of job opportunity, lack of development.
So
now, I'm listening.
So what would you say is the greatest success the foundation has seen?
Come again, please.
What would you say are some of the successes the foundation has had since the work began?
Okay, the chief of Commander Dominacy in Central Region of Ghana, he has donated a huge land, 40 acres of land, purposely to construct a first ever disability sports educational complex called Africa Disability Center of Excellence. That's the project name. At Commander Dominacy in the Central Region, with this project, we're able to build, going to help so many disabilities in Africa, for them to have educational, those training, and so many things here. This is our organization, one of well-known organizations in Ghana here, very well-known. And we're still looking for the international partners, corporate bodies, and so many, the donors to come to Ghana. And HOT have even come out now this year, since last year and this year, HOT, I personally, have been pursuing as the president. We realize that if you come to Africa with a disability, we don't have the job opportunity. We lack in a job opportunity. The government find it difficult to employ with a disability, and even the corporate body, they find it difficult to employ. So the organization have come out with a business proposal that ourselves, we manufactured very powerful natural and organic produce, which is very unique. So this organization purposely going to employ so many disabilities in Ghana, and as well as not even thinking of Ghana alone. We're going to send it to some of the African countries, like Nigerian, like Liberia, like Sierra Leone, like South Africa, so that if things being that we get invested, these people all will be able to have opportunity and work. We design.
So, what are the next steps for the foundation?
Come again, please.
So, what's next for the foundation? What sort of work are you going to be doing going forward?
Okay. Now, the upcoming, even this, on the 13th of this month, 13th of April, the period. The Ghana gospel musicians have agreed to do a gospel music show to help also to raise a little bit of funds for us to start buying the machines that we're going to use to do this produce, so that the produce company can start, so that the disabled people can start be employed, so that we can pay them in a monthly, so that we pick them from street. So sometimes they've been begging on the street. So we pick them from street and we give them the opportunity. We pay them. So we're going to do it in Ghana schools. We are going to give them a stand. And every morning, they will go to the school and they sell the products to the students and the ministries and so many bus terminals in there. So everything is inside. If the government wants to support, you know, by Ghana, we are finding a little bit challenging the government. So that's why we're still calling upon the general public, especially the institution. First, if anybody wants to come, what to do is I reward them first to come, then do the facility work himself, see everything. So that we can do this project to support the disabilities in Africa.
Thank you very much for taking the time to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this next segment of our show, we'll get an update on disabilities employment from our friend, Sean Wiltshire. So tell me a little bit about your latest work.
Well, right now, some of the work that's going on in Canada around employment has to do with some national accessibility legislation that we have in Canada that'll be enacted shortly. One of the challenges, Cameron, has been that each of the provinces are also now looking at the accessibility legislation across our country. So it's around getting consultations ongoing. So I work with one of the National Employment Associations here in Canada called the Canadian Association for Supported Employment, which supports initiatives in Canada that help individuals connect to paid employment. And a lot of that work was in the work that I had done in Southeast Asia with the DRPI project. So we're taking this sort of this exchange of information with North and South and sort of sharing it best practices. So we're really focusing now lately on some of the accessibility, ensuring that not only that the legislation includes physical accessibility, but accessibility to services. So I know across the country here in Canada, we're doing a great deal of consultation to educate the government on what folks are saying about their ability to gain access to employment or other educational opportunities that will lead to employment. So that seems to be a very important focus. And we last year, we had some new statistics that came out earlier, beginning of the 2018 year, that talked about the accessibility of employment options and that for individuals with intellectual or developmental challenges, that this was continuing to be an area of concern. So those are kind of the two focuses that I've been sort of working on. So it's a slow time to move processes ahead because government is really engaged in a legislative process. And so we need the community to be very active in sharing their voices and their views with their elected representatives. And that works, I think, in Cameron and all the countries that people are trying to make advancements in.
So in terms of things like what should be in place for a person with a disability under the new legislation, is there a consensus as to what the priorities are in terms of we need to tackle this first and then we can...
Some of the things that they talked about originally in the legislation was it's part education, and I think it's part of the setting the example. Governments themselves have to become more diverse and more inclusive and look at the things that are providing barriers to even gaining access to the public service. So it's a very broad representation of how do you make a social change with, you know, educating people on the advancements that folks have lots of talent, and you know how they may get to work or how they may use their computer is at the end of the day very much irrelevant to how the work is done. The other thing that we've focused on too is the economic imperative of including people with disabilities in the labor force. Both across North America, we continue to see challenges in some labor markets where there is not enough people demographically, or the demographics are changing. So populations are shrinking and workforces are getting tighter. And this is particularly important in Southeast Asia, given the fact that, as an example, the Nepalese unemployment rate has been below 4% for over a decade. So why does there continue to be challenges with employing people with disabilities? It really focuses on education and demonstration of the successes that are already going on. So I think that's been one of the big focuses, is educating Canadians and other people to the benefits of having a diverse workforce and inclusivity.
So how do you go about tearing through some of the myths and misperceptions that might lead to hesitation on the part of an employer? Their mindset is, I don't want to hire someone with a disability because the accommodations will put me out of business, for example.
Absolutely. And one of the best things and tools that we've been able to develop over the years is a toolkit of champions, of people who you might already have shared this opportunity with, who have hired other folks with individuals with disabilities and seen that accommodations in very many cases cost less than $500, if anything at all. People think accommodations are the blue parking spot and a ramp, when really accommodation may be an more open workspace. It may be moving an office from a different floor. It may be adjusting the work hours to accommodate somebody's disability transportation needs. Employers really are anxious, and this is something I've seen, especially in the last 5 years. They're very anxious to hire people with disabilities, but they're unsure of how to support, integrate, and accommodate. And so I often have this saying, employers want to do the right thing, but they're afraid of doing the wrong thing. And so they really need some education and some support from our community. And we've been educating the business community about not only the disposable dollars that we as a disability So we demonstrate to employers that people who have disabilities, we think differently. We examine problems differently, because every day that we are in the world that is not built for us, you are problem solving. You are looking at solutions differently. And I always say to businesses, innovation is what you want. And that comes from offering an opportunity to solve a problem from a different point of view. So it's educating the employers. It is a ongoing process, Cameron, but it is one that has gotten easier over the years, because people are anxious to hire people. The labor market demands that they need to diversify, but they're also learning and being educated that whether you're a new Canadian or a person with a disability or a senior who might be returning to the workforce, all those barriers seem to drop away when you explain the benefits of a diversified workforce and present good evidentiary examples. And so by giving an example and telling a business person to business person, this is how it helps solve my business problem, is very much a way to sell the idea that diversity works.
So do you find there's enough understanding of disabilities like mental health issues, for example, something that's not as easy to classify for an employer?
And that continues to be an evolving situation. I'll give you an example. A lot of the banks in Canada have a target or are trying to increase their understanding of their employees' mental health concerns. And I've often said to people I've engaged with in the banking industry, just as one example, is you probably have already met that target of 7% of people identify with a mental health concern, but you may not have created the environment yet where people feel comfortable talking about a mental health issue. So it's always about environmental concerns, because people who are challenged by psychosocial mental health concerns really need an environment where they feel safe and comfortable to talk about their illness. We don't chastise people if they have to go for kidney dialysis or if they get cancer. It's moving the mindset around mental health illness and challenges to an understanding that it's a physical concern. We need to have an environment that supports the mental health of individuals. And that one is a continuing to evolve, Cameron. It is really, I think it's one that has really driven the diversification of a workforce in a positive light from the perspective of we're causing people to have conversations. It's not great that many people in large corporations or in small business suffer and challenged by mental health concerns, but the conversations that we're having are starting to address the root cause and support of individuals. And, you know, if you have a mental health concern, you can still work. You can still be productive. And we have to adapt to these types of challenges and look for the best solutions. I often say to folks with who have come to me from an employment perspective around mental health concerns, you know, contract work is good. When you feel good, you can work. And when you're not feeling good, you have an opportunity to get the help that you need and not look at, you know, how is my employment being affected? So we're really trying to move the needle on two fronts, I think. One is getting the employers to understand that many of their employees may already have mental health challenges that they're not sharing, and also getting people with mental health challenges to not be so afraid of sharing their challenges and their overcoming the challenges of mental health. So it's on a two-front system, but it is a harder one to identify because people do not see always a physical manifestation of the barrier.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
I can.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
From March 1st to 31st, Canada will celebrate the Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, RVF. At that time of the year, get to know your Francophone neighbors. Francophone communities are present in every province and territory. RVF gives us the opportunity to get to know one another through celebration, exhibition, theater, and community activities. Linguistic duality is not only an important Canadian characteristic, it is fundamental and necessary for our continued vivre ensemble, our living together. The very existence of our country relies on this powerful tool, the continued presence of Francophone and Anglophone communities across the entire country. In this year, where we will commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Official Languages Act, let's focus on our desire to pursue and strengthen this very unique relationship between our linguistic communities.
Visit rvf.ca for more information.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Richard Offey from the Richoff Disability Foundation and Sean Wiltshire of Avalon Employment. In this segment of our show, we're going to get a quick update from our friend Neil Boulanger from the BC Aboriginal Network on Disability Society. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with BCANS. I understand there was some recent activity at the UN.
Yes, we were very fortunate to receive an award from the Zero Project, which is an initiative put on by the ESSEL Foundation in Austria. So BCANS was nominated for our total services that we provide to our communities and their membership, Indigenous individuals and families living with a disability. And we were nominated and went through a fairly extensive process. There was a three-review process. First, they look at the initial nomination to approve it based upon the information and their criteria. And then, secondly, they shortlist. We were fortunate enough to be shortlisted. And then, thirdly, they send out the nominations across the world to, I think about 80 or something different disability organizations to review them and make their recommendations to move forward. So we were fortunate enough to be one of the organizations that was recognized. So we were invited to attend and to present at the Zero Conference. And I think according to the website, after we looked, there was about 500 to 700 different representatives across the world, representing different countries and different disability organizations and different disabilities. So it was a good trip. We were there for about a week, and luckily we were able to go with support from one of our international partners. So it was quite good.
So can you tell me a little bit about what you took away from the conference, hearing from some of the other speakers?
Absolutely. So it was a three-day event, and the days were jam-packed. And as I said, there were different presenters from around the world. And I think the most interesting thing that I saw, which sometimes were isolated from, you know, just working in one country, is the different levels that different countries are at around the world, where, you know, as it relates to disability services and their perception of disability. You know, some of the presenters from some of the less developed countries were talking about things such as deinstitutionalization as a new concept, and they were quite excited about that, which, of course, it's a very positive move for their country. But I think that when we look at it, we say, well, you know, we've been working on that for decades now. And so that was a very interesting component of it, just to see the different stages in the progress that organizations and countries are at.
So what are your hopes for the future of this? Do you believe that should the awards come up again, that BCANS will have a shot at it?
I would think so. Right now we're working with national disability groups and provincial groups across the country to put in some proposals in relation to the CRPD and the optional protocol. And I think that'll be a unique initiative, if we're successful in that, to do monitoring and to work on the shadow report as a collective. In 2017, we were fortunate enough to go to Geneva and present to the CRPD committee directly. And we worked with civil society across Canada. But the result was kind of disjointed, and we prepared, I think there was about 17 different shadow reports in response to the government's LOI. So we're looking, you know, if we are successful with our partner agencies to have a more concrete and coordinated shadow report and move that forward as a united disability sector in Canada. So something like that, I think, is worthwhile to take a look at and worthy of a recognition of some sort, whether or not it would be of a Zero Project award, I don't know.
So the reports that you're working on, what's the most urgent need, the biggest priority?
Well, and that's the thing. So we have to take a look at it and see what the government's response is from the UN recommendations. and give our input as civil society to those recommendations. But I mean, there's number of priority areas, but we'll have to focus on what is what comes from the government's response and what the UN identifies. So we'll have to take a look at that new document and then refer back to the 2017 concluding observations that the UN put to Government of Canada.
So you're maintaining ties with them just to sort of make sure everyone's on the same page.
Absolutely. And this hasn't happened yet, but somebody will have a contract to do this work, and whoever that is, whether it's our collective or another, we'll be working with them regardless, just to make sure that from our perspective, the Indigenous voice is heard, and then, of course, from our partners' perspective, their needs and their priorities are heard as well. So it's a good step for civil society today to work more cohesively together and you know, continue to build partnerships and break down barriers, because we're all here for the same reason, and just to move forward.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you, Cam.
Of course. So, my friends, I hope from today's show you gained an insight into the international scope of some of these matters. The truth is, what we face here, barriers to employment, barriers to accessibility, these problems are not isolated. They are, in fact, a universal matter. And what we have here, the policies, the protections, they don't necessarily exist elsewhere. But things like the UN Convention do make at least some standard possible. Truth is, we can do better by all our people. It's just a matter of recognizing individuals with disabilities as what they are. A valuable part of the community, and a great resource in many cases. We can have the same homogenized impression of how the world works and keep that up forever. That's fine, but there's no growth in it. It comes to a point where someone has to challenge the establishment, challenge our preconceived notions, and say, is this all there is? Is this all that's possible? That's where progress begins, my friends. But it's not where it ends. Once the question has been posed, can we make a better quality of life? People will inevitably seek for that. Who's going to stay locked into a mindset that says, I have to be poor because of my disability, or I have to be excluded because I think or move or walk or see a little differently? No one's going to do that, because time does change the world, my friends. It can be a scary, laborious process, it's very true, but growth and evolution, where all peoples are concerned, really is inevitable. How is it that we now look at people of color, people of different sexual orientation, even people of another gender, as more equal? Because it had to happen. Because somebody got it into their heads to say, these are people. Their voices count. Their minds count. Their work can make the world a better place. And as long as we keep that in mind, we will aim for that horizon of a better tomorrow. But it takes all of us keeping an open heart and an open mind, and remembering, no matter what makes us unique, we are part of the equation. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.